This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 155 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stufko.
What's up, everybody? What's up, Tristan 155? Who we got?
We got Jonathan Fields, man. Great guests. Someone like we spoke about at the end of Jill Miller's episode, someone that's just in that mental space. I'm really interested to kind of pick his brain in terms of, well, he calls himself, well, the book's How to Find a Better Life.
Yeah.
By memory. And we all want to find a better life, right?
Yeah. And it's one of these things that happiness is, for him, a life, not even a lifestyle. Like they say happiness is the way.
Mm.
And it all starts with our thoughts. And like you said, thought provoking. His energy is something that really speaks to me. I'm very, straightforward, high energy type of guy, and I need that contrarian type of energy to calm me down. And that's why I float a lot and search for anything that I can to alternative ways to detach. And just when you hear Jonathan speak in his delivery, you'll get the gist that he has something figured out.
Yeah, and apologies, I just butchered that. It was the Good Life Project.
There it is.
There you go. But you go. It's a
your
great,
intent was in the right place.
Yeah, it was kind of
the Good Life Project.
Good Life, but yeah, apologies about that if you're listening.
It wasn't even close, actually.
It wasn't close at all.
It was way off.
Guys, before I bring Jonathan on, big shout out. Thank you for subscribing, listening, and sharing it with your friends. Continue to do it. We love it when we see people sharing our stuff, so thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Share it. Tag your friends, too. I mean, we bring on a wide array of guests in the wellness space, in the MMA space, and writers, whatever it may be. Everybody has friends who definitely could learn from this vision that we're creating here, and you guys are a big part of that. So continue to support us. We'll keep bringing it.
Awesome, guys. So without further ado, here is Jonathan Fields. Okay, guys, our special guest is Jonathan Fields. Jonathan is a dad, husband, entrepreneur, and award-winning author. He has a brilliant mission-driven media company and education venture, Good Life Projects, where he produces a top-ranked podcast, a video series of his conversations with the likes of Sir Ken Robinson, Elizabeth Gilbert, Milton Glaser, Brene Brown, Gretchen Rubin, and last year, he released his hit book, How to Live a Good Life. We welcome Jonathan Fields. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
Jonathan, like Tristan just mentioned, you got a lot of stuff going on. You got your podcast, books. I want to really start with the most recent book, How to Live a Good Life. Could you share with our listeners a little insight on who this book is for and some intent on why you wrote it?
Yeah, I mean, the book is really written for folks who have hit a point in life where, they've probably accomplished a lot externally, but they're still feeling like something just ain't right. Something's missing, and they're not entirely sure what it is. And they also very likely don't want to blow up the lives that they've built in order to get it. So it's really sort of taking a look at that person and offering just some really step-by-step, scientifically validated things to do a little bit every day so that you can kind of ease your way into it.
Is this something that you feel we get caught in a grind and maybe we're lacking that fulfillment? Or is this something that is just more of a hindsight looking back on your accomplishments and be able to register those and gauge the macro wins?
You know, I think it's probably a blend of both of those things. You know, our brains, sadly, are wired with something called a negativity bias, which means that we tend to default towards seeing what's not right, what we haven't accomplished, and what's still left to do. And we focus on that. It puts us into a sort of a negative, a downward spiral. And so one of the things we really have to do, if we actually want to reverse that and put ourselves into an upward, a positive, a grace and gratitude spiral, is to really start to acknowledge the things that are going well, the things that are, you know, and it can be the tiniest little things. So it's really a blend of both. You know, one is owning not just the stuff that isn't right, but the stuff that is right, the stuff that's going well in the past and in the present. And then also starting to take action proactively to, you know, be very intentional about the things that you do, the relationships you build, and the life that you craft from this moment forward.
Yeah, Jonathan, you mentioned that word acknowledgement. Was that something that you struggled with earlier in life?
In terms of acknowledging my own accomplishments and, yeah, or wins, you know, it's interesting. I don't... It's for me, it's less about acknowledging it. It's more about being present. I'm pretty good at actually saying, you know, like, you know, checking off a box and saying, yeah, I did that. You know, I was a part of a team that did that. This happened. What I haven't been sort of historically good at is savoring that, is really saying, yes, this happened. And you know what? It really meant something. It was powerful. You know, this was a moment that signaled something really good, you know, a deepening of a connection, a deepening of meaning or grace or joy or lightness. So I'm pretty good at the acknowledging side. I traditionally haven't been great at the savoring side of it, and the really just taking a moment and saying, huh, that just happened. And that was pretty, you know, that was actually pretty cool. And I'm kind of organically wired to be incredibly future oriented. You know, for better or worse, I'm somebody who tends to be constantly looking out into the future and projecting into the future and trying to figure out what's coming. And that actually has served me pretty well in my career and in business. But it just makes it that much more mandatory for me to develop a daily practice that allows me to pull back and be present in what's happening in front of me today.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, though, some of the differences. So we have the two types of people and regarding the book and how to live a good life. So the person who's, you know, working really hard and has accomplished things, and they just need to look back on their accomplishments. So, and then you have the person, though, who hasn't even they haven't got started yet. Maybe they're, you know, there's a fear of failure with that. You mentioned, you know, certain steps for the first person to look back with acknowledgement. Talk about the steps, though, of the person who's listening that hasn't even got started yet. Maybe, you know, they're holding themselves back because maybe there's fear there.
Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting is that when you really deconstruct it, the steps aren't all that different. We tend to, you know, for so many people in that early stage where they're like, I'm stuck, I don't know what to do. Should I say yes to this particular, you know, like opportunity or job or relationship? We tend to feel like I just don't know what to do. I don't know what avenue to take. You know, where do I get started? And to me, you know, the deeper answer to that question pretty much always starts with self-knowledge, with self-discovery. You know, we're always looking for the thing to do, rather than, you know, to kind of like externally to move ourselves forward, rather than what are the questions I can ask? What are the things I can discover about who I am? What matters to me? What are my, like, you know, deeper values and beliefs? What lights me up? All of those things, because until we actually know that, you know, When it comes down to it, you know, I look at life as three buckets: connection, vitality, and contribution. Your connection bucket is about deep and meaningful relationships. Your vitality bucket is about optimizing your state of mind and body. And your contribution bucket is about how you contribute to the world. And for most of us, we equate that with work, whether it's our paid work or not. So when you say I'm stuck, or when somebody says I'm stuck, or when somebody's like new in their journey and they're trying to figure out what to do, you know, quote, do with their lives, what they're really looking at is how do I do my meaningful, like what is my meaningful work in the world, which to me falls within this, the contribution bucket. And that, it's a two-part discovery, whether you're 20 years into life or whether you're 20 years old and starting out of, you know, like university or something like that. It always starts with self-discovery. And so for the person who's 20 and just starting out, that means, okay, so let me ask some very introspective questions, likely for the first time in their life, because this is not something that is generally taught in any sort of academic setting. For the person who's in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, who's trying to reconnect with that thing, the interesting thing is they are very likely asking the exact same questions, because so many of us have blown past those and just done the thing we're supposed to do in the name of being a responsible adult. And then we get to our point in our lives where we realize we've got everything that we, you know, we're striving for, and we still don't feel the way we thought we felt. So what's interesting is whether you come at it from those two different stages, the inquiry is still pretty similar.
Jonathan, you started Good Life Project in 2012. You know, it's been a good 5 years and you've had so much success. You know, you just spoke about finding yourself. What would you say was the biggest thing you found out about yourself in the last 5 years?
Man, that's a good question. there's so much. You know, one of them I think I alluded to already, which is that I am massively future-oriented. And while I am pretty good at acknowledging what I've done, so much of life is creating the space to just breathe into those small moments that happen along the way and embrace them and smile into them and actually go past acknowledgement and really enjoy them. I think that's one of the big things, and that's one of my practices. You know, probably other things for me is the importance of meaning. You know, I think we tend to be maniacally focused on happiness as the metric of a life well lived. And look, we all want to be happy. You know, I'm a dad. I want my kid to have happiness in her life. And at the same time, that can be a really big challenge, because happiness is a snapshot. It's not the movie of your life. It's a state that we move into and out of. And if we define happiness as, you know, this thing that has to be perpetually at a really high level for us to be living a good life, we're going to be let down pretty often, and we may actually end up really judging ourselves. So one of the big awakenings for me was that, you know, meaning is really taking a center stage as something that becomes a much more sustained and sustainable metric for a life well lived. You know, like, am I doing something? Am I taking actions? Am I building relationships? Am I contributing to the world in a way that is deeply meaningful to me and hopefully matters to others as well? And I think that's been something that has sort of been an interesting shift in me over the last 5 years. And it's come partly through my own experiments and my own venture building. It's also come through just the amazing opportunity to sit down with some of the most incredible teachers and accomplished human beings on the planet across nearly every field over the last 5 years, and just ask them questions about their lives.
Yeah, learning from you know, it's once again the Newton quote about the giants. One of my favorite quotes. And you mentioned intention. It takes a lot of thought-provoking insight individually to, you know, ask ourselves these questions and have this checklist of where our life is and where we want our life to go. What advice would you give to the person listening who to reach out to for that? You know, it's not all of us have that, a strong circle of influence. And there's a lot of people wearing the expert hat in, you know, a lot of different fields right now, you know, whenever you click on social media. So for the, you know, the fan listening, what advice would you go them, you know, where to get that from in terms of like guiding their life on that right path?
Yeah. So it's another really good question. And I tend to be pretty contrarian in a lot of my sort of lens on the quote personal growth / self-help / spirituality world. And I'm not entirely sure that the first place you should be looking is to anybody but yourself. You know, we place so much stock in finding the right gurus in our lives and the right teachers. Truth is, there's very little that we don't already know. It's more just sort of sitting down. And, you know, like I could give you a list of a handful of questions. And that's, to a certain extent, that's you know, kind of why I ended up writing a book last year. It was that I didn't really want people to have to rely on other people. There are really basic ideas and questions that have been out there and vetted and scientifically established about how to inquire into yourself. You know, and what's funny is if you look at all the latest science and you overlay it with everything from the Stoics to Buddhism to so much sort of ancient philosophy and ideology, it's all the same stuff. And what it makes you realize is we've been asking the same questions and knowing all of the same answers for thousands of years. We just don't want to hear it because it means that we can't really get where we want to go by trying to find the person who's going to get us there. We need to do the work. And mentors are valuable, you know, because you can go to somebody and say, hey, listen, what have you figured out? What are the bits and pieces where it may just help illuminate the journey a bit? But they're not a replacement for deep self-inquiry and experimentation. And they're not necessarily the thing that should come first.
That's interesting. The whole, do you think it's because we've just, as collectively as people, we've just lost that connection with ourselves, or maybe it's a trust issue with our intuition of where to go with our lives?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of all of that. You know, but I feel like it's really hard work to do the inner work, you know? So how many times has this happened to you, or have you seen this happen? Many folks will go out and say, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for my teacher. I'm ready for my sage. I'm ready for my coach, right? And they go out and they find someone. They're like, oh my gosh, this is the most perfect person. They're so brilliant. They're so wise. And the person starts to, you know, if the person is really wise, what the person is going to do largely is offer really simple lessons that you already know and invite you to ask questions of yourself that you've been avoiding asking. And very often, as soon as that, you know, if you find that person who does that, you're going to be like, oh, this isn't right. You know, so what we tend to do very often is we go seeking answers from other people. And the moment they actually give us what we want, we reject them and we reject their processes. Sometimes because we're just not ready, sometimes, but very often because it's going to require us to do a lot of work ourselves. And it may also require us to discover things or step into, you know, to own things about our current reality that's going to make us really uncomfortable, that we've been kind of glossing over or sugarcoating or creating coping mechanisms to make us feel baseline okay without dealing with. So, you know, we'll kind of do anything to avoid the people and the processes to be able to just sort of be baseline okay and not have to do the work to figure out what really matters to me, you know, like, and why am I not doing it in the world? And so, I mean, that's my sense, you know, because once we do that work and we start to know, if we then don't take action on it, we actually feel a lot worse, because then in addition to a lack of meaning and joy and connection, we add a sense of shame and futility for now knowing and not acting on it. So we don't want to go there. So I think a lot of us just kind of backpedal and we choose complacency and, you know, Teddy Roosevelt's gray twilight over hard work, self-discovery, and full expression, meaning, joy, lightness, and all those other things.
Yeah, Jonathan, you spoke about the mentor, and you also spoke obviously about, you know, people that can give you feedback and maybe call you out on things. Was there any one person that was your guy that or girl, and they helped you on your journey?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've been asked that a lot, and for me, there hasn't been a single person. I've had many friends in my life, and many different teachers who I've gotten different things from. And it's funny because there have been times where I really wanted to find that one person who is my, you know, my quote teacher or my mentor, like that one person where I, who would satisfy all of my needs and I could put complete faith in that one person. I'm still open to the possibility that someone like that may arrive in my life. But I don't feel the need to have that one person. And, I've also, I'm also the type of person who spends a fair amount of time asking the big questions, and I have for a lot of years. So I tend not to be the type of person who needs to be pushed to ask them. I push myself pretty aggressively to go to those places. So I, you know, what I tend to do is go there organically, and then when I hit a window where I'm like, I can't quite figure this out, then I'll look for somebody who may have deep wisdom in one particular area or around one particular question, and I'll go seek them out and sort of, you know, get some more, you know, tactical strike oriented mentoring from them.
Jonathan, in my late 20s, I got involved with a leadership and personal development company out of actually Las Vegas, Nevada. And I went through, it actually was a very transitional moment in my life. It actually helped me turn a lot of things around. And there was one specific process that stuck with me over the few years of these courses. And we were put in a scenario to have a conversation with our 7-year-old self. And it was a reflection sort of process. I always think back, you know, when we struggle with things, we stress out about things, we're always just that little child who were, you know, best friends with our parents sort of thing. When you're reflecting back and looking back at, you know, yourself as a younger guy, what sort of things would you be telling him?
What would I be telling my 7-year-old self? Probably just chill out. Although honestly, man, I'm pretty happy with where I am in life. There's always growth that I'm looking to achieve. You know, yeah. I have an incredible, you know, the way I earn my living fills me up in so many different ways. I have incredible friendships and relationships, you know, an amazing wife and child. And if I were to tell my 7-year-old self something different, that would alter the course of where I would go and change where I am right now. I wouldn't want to do that. So I don't know if I would actually tell that person anything different.
How about just some advice maybe? That's an awesome answer too, man. That's it's very refreshing to talk to a guy that has that response.
Yeah, thank you. You know, just general advice, I think, and this is, you know, I think maybe what's tripping me up here is also at around 7 years old, you know, that's probably when you're starting to become self-aware and also self-conscious. Mm-hmm. But most kids aren't like all that much. You're still pretty free. I think around, you know, like when 9, 10, 11, 12 is when it really kicks in. Then when you hit your teen years, you know, which is why middle school is just so utterly filled with angst because it's a self-consciousness fest. And we all tend to melt down because it's all about how do I fit in, you know? So to me, there isn't a whole lot of advice for the younger self, but you know, the angsty teens and 20-year-old self, what I would probably say is you don't have to have it all figured out, you know, is spend less time trying to figure out how to fit in and more time trying to figure out who you are. Because that person, like that essence, is the thing that will let you find out, you know, who the people in your life are going to be, who will be profoundly meaningful to you and the communities and what the work that you might want to do, you know, how are you going to contribute meaningfully to the world? And it's, I don't know if you ever watched, the old, Bill Murray movie Stripes, but, there's a line in there where he just says, chill out, Francis. And it would probably be that, just chill out. You know, your primary responsibility when you're younger, I think, is just to run experiments, to get a beat on who you are, what matters, what you're good at or capable of getting good at. So that then once you dial that in, you can turn your lens out to the world and start to say, how does this intersect with the world in a way that allows me to feel lit up while also being surrounded by people I can't get enough of, and in some way being of enough service to others that maybe I can be compensated at a level where it sustains me.
Yeah, Jonathan, what I really love about you is your family side, you know, your great relationship with your wife and your daughter. One thing I wanted to ask you about was the World Domination Summit back in 2011, when it was one of your first times speaking on stage. And can you talk about the significance of what your daughter gave you before you actually went on stage?
Yeah, I mean, it was an unplanned moment. That was the first time, you know, I've spoken at large audiences around the world, you know, since then many, many times. But that was the first time I stood up on stage and talked to 500 people, and I was pretty nervous. And before I left, I didn't even really realize it, but my daughter had taken a little piece of paper and just drawn a series of colored hearts on it and stuck it into my pack. And it was kind of like to say to me, like, Dad, everything's going to be cool. And when I went out to speak, you know, like I saw the paper and I grabbed that along with just a single piece of paper with a few words on it, notes for my talk. And I put them both on the confidence monitor that's on the stage for speakers. And I kept it there just so that I could glance down at it and know that no matter what happened, whether I bombed, whether I did great, I could look at it and know that this was a passing moment. And the things that were real and sustaining for me, you know, it was her love, her joy. It was my family. And it didn't matter what happened on stage. You know, if I showed up with the right intention and just did my best, I was going to go home and get hugs and kisses from my kid. And she couldn't care less. And it kind of just made everything okay on stage. And nobody knew that it was up there until the very end. It was actually after I was done speaking, there was a closing panel and a bunch of people were invited up and we're all kind of sitting on chairs. And somebody from the audience asked something like, trying to remember the question they asked. It was something about what inspires you. And you know, everyone went down the line. That was the last person to answer the question. And as each person was answering, I just kept looking at the hearts. And when it came my turn to answer, I walked over and I picked up the hearts and I just held them up to show the audience. And I just said this, you know, and I told them the story. And I was just, you know, it was a moving moment for me. It was a moving moment for you know, a moment of connection for the audience. And as you know, whenever I can remember, I still very often travel and take that piece of paper with the hearts with me when I speak.
It's a great story. We appreciate you sharing that with us. And you mentioned connection. It seems really evident that that's a very important part of how you live your life, you know, how you write your books, your podcast. Is this a huge, would it be safe to say that those connections that you've made is a huge reason where you are today?
Yeah. I mean, no doubt. On multiple levels. One, you know, to me, that's sort of the most nourishing part of life. George Valian, who's a curator of something called the Harvard Study for Men, also known as the Grand Study, which It's the longest running study that examined sort of like, you know, massive sets of variables for men over generations. And basically asked, you know, of all of these things, what leads you to live a good life? And he was kind of famous for saying, look, there are a bazillion things that I could talk to, but there's one thing that really makes a difference, and that's love. Like that was the single most defining element in terms of somebody living a good life. And I believe that, you know, to me, developing deep relationships where you can be real, you feel like there's safety, there's shared values and beliefs, there's a sense of, you know, we look at the world together. And in your personal relationships, building history over time and trust and love, you know, to me, yeah, that's kind of the heartbeat of a lot of what I do, what we do as a company. You know, we build a lot of community. At Good Life Project, you know, we've got media properties, which a lot of people point to. But a lot of what we do is also, you know, is community building. And there's a reason for that. You know, I just feel like belonging is such a huge part of sort of flourishing as a human being. And so many of us are having trouble finding it. So we try and play a role in helping people discover how to find it and also creating moments for people to gather and find it sort of on the ground in real life. So to me, yeah, relationships, they're hugely important, you know, and people talk about relationships very often in the context of work and networking and influencers and opportunities and jobs. And sure, all that stuff is real. All that stuff matters and it's important and it opens doors. But fundamentally, you know, there's a much richer vein of impact to mine when it comes to relationships beyond sort of professional opportunity.
I just remember like it was yesterday. I grew up in a place, and I'm sure, you know, hopefully people listening could share, you know, have similar story to my upbringing. But, you know, dilapidated part of the United States, Northeast Ohio. And in my a lot of my buddies, you know, our dads worked in steel mills and the economy was pretty dilapidated. And by the time you get to a certain age, you know, a lot of my friends at the time, you just kind of have this calloused approach to life. And it's almost like, oh, I don't need to meet new people. Or, you know, I don't want to put myself out there or be vulnerable because somebody might hurt me. What advice would you give to the listener who has that mindset right now?
Yeah, and look, my heart, you know, I get it. you know, especially in this day and age, there are a lot of people who are in pain, a lot of people who feel like doors have been shut, you know, in many different levels. And, you know, I guess there are a lot of different ways you could approach that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, from a relationship standpoint, from an economic opportunity standpoint. But I think that the big challenge, to me, the single biggest challenge at that moment is that the belief in a different reality being possible doesn't exist. And unless and until somebody even has the slightest sliver that tomorrow might be different than today, nothing you can say, nothing you can do will make any difference. You know, so the window for me or the thing for me is, you know, what can you do to in some way crack that shield that says tomorrow is going to be the same as today? Why should I even bother trying? Why would I do something different? Like, how can you crack open the window just the slightest bit to the possibility of a different reality? Which kind of interesting is people have asked me over the years, what is Good Life Project? And in the beginning, I was like, you know, we film a video series and we build community, we do programs and now like, you know, create a podcast. And I didn't realize that what I was actually doing was something else. And I didn't realize it until I received a gift from somebody who back then was a viewer of the video series that we created. And he was a broadcast editor. And he sent me an email one day and he said, hey, listen, you know, you actually, at the end of every interview you do, you ask everybody, what does it mean to you to live a good life? And he's like, you know, I got really curious what all people's answers had been over time. So he actually went back through all prior episodes and made a montage video of like 30 or 40 different people answering the question. And he like beautifully edited. And he's like, you know, I want to give this to you because it's really made a difference. And I watched it. And you know, my wife was standing behind me with all, like tears in our eyes. Mm-hmm. Like for two reasons. One, that somebody had actually gone and done this, you know, just because they were so moved by the work we were doing. But on a bigger picture, there was an awakening. And this is where it circles back to your question. And that was that what I was really creating was a body of evidence. A body of proof was this massive archive where anybody, you know, like from a kid growing up in a steel town to somebody who was growing up in a really tough neighborhood in the city to somebody who was living out in the middle of, you know, in any circumstance where almost anybody could look at this growing archive and find 2, 3, 4, 5 people who in some way started from a similar place, very often with even greater disadvantages or challenges, and figured out a way to create an astonishing life. And when you do that, it becomes really hard to continue to defend the belief that tomorrow can't be different than today. And you know, so it's kind of interesting that when you ask that question, it also triggers to me the realization that part of my work right now is building this massive body of proof that, you know, would allow somebody who was close to the possibility of a better tomorrow to bump up against it and see that, in fact, no matter how challenging things are, maybe just maybe, you know, like there is a way to create a different future reality.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Yeah. Very powerful.
Yeah. It's quite interesting you say that. So you've kind of answered your own question in terms of what it means for Jonathan Fields to live a good life in terms of giving back and letting other people see the possibilities out there.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. You know, to me, it kind of goes back to, you know, those three buckets I talked about. You know, you've got vitality, your state of mind, your state of body. You've got relationships, you know, your connection and your contribution. And, you know, the way I look at it is if I do a little something so that every day I keep an honest check on how full or empty those three buckets are. And I do a little something every day. I do what I need to do to fill them as high as they can go and keep them topped off. You know, I don't worry so much about the long term. I don't worry so much about the legacy. I don't worry so much about like the big stuff. I know that if I develop a daily practice of getting real about the state of those three buckets every day and then doing a little something every day to make sure that they're being taken care of, the long term, like what, you know, will I live a good life in reflection? It's going to take care of itself.
Yeah. That giving side of you though, Jonathan, like when you set up your yoga studio, you know, you're going through 9/11 and realistically it's one of the biggest tragedies in the history of the world. Was that that community feel? Was that what kept you in New York?
Yeah, that was part of it. I was born just outside of New York and I've been in the city since 89. So pretty much lived my entire adult life as in, you know, in New York City. So, it's really hard to leave no matter what, mm-hmm. once you're in New York. That was part of it. You know, it was a horrifying, profoundly moving, transformational experience. You know, I knew people who died that day. Everybody in New York mm-hmm. knew people who died that day. And I considered, you know, we literally launched a company, on the eve of 9/11 in New York City. And I thought long and hard about whether I was going to do that because I was also married with a 3-month-old baby in a new home. And I was really concerned about putting, you know, all of that in jeopardy by taking another huge risk by starting a new business. Starting a new business in the best of circumstances is a huge risk. Starting it in the face of that was incredibly uncertain. But I also had this real strong sense of this is the thing that has to happen now. And this is... there's never been a stronger need for community and healing. And if I can play some role in serving that need, then yeah, it has to happen. And we were very fortunate. You know, we made a lot of changes and we launched 2 months later, November 19th of that year. And we flourished quickly as both a community and you know, like soon after as a company. But yeah, my sense is we probably did flourish so much because we were driven by that and because we created a space and an ethos and populated it with just human beings who are incredibly kind and generous and compassionate. And that was probably, you know, amongst my earliest experiences with creating things like that and how powerful it can be both for others and also for me, you know, as somebody who's in some way involved in the creation of something like that.
Looking back on your growth from, you know, that moment where you launched to right now, and you said you like living in the future, you know, 16 plus years ago from where it was to today, where do you see your movement in 16 years?
Man, I have no idea.
How about where do you want, what do you want, where do you want it to be?
Yeah, you know, what I can tell you is I'm less concerned about what it looks like. I'm more interested in what the qualities of that existence will be. So I know that I want to be fiercely engaged with whatever the nature of the work is that I'm doing. I know that, you know, I want to. So here's a standard that I use, and this is probably going to be helpful. Whenever there's an opportunity that presents it to me, I try and, you know, I try and apply it. I'm human, so I don't always do a great job of it. But I ask myself, will this allow me to absorb myself in activities and relationships that fill me up while surrounding myself with people I cannot get enough of? And I kind of feel like if I keep asking that question, that 16-year thing is going to take care of itself. You know, and if you deconstruct it, you know, activities and relationships, those are the, you know, the things that, that I love to do and the people I love to be around, that, you know, absorption brings me as close to a flow state as I can be. You know, things that fill me up means that they're sort of like constantly, you know, I'm sparked, I'm lit up by it. In some way, they're deeply meaningful to me. With people I can't get enough of, you know, that means that I'm always going to be working in relation to people who, where we make each other better. And the work, the nature of the work, you know, for me, that lights me up tends to be a blend of fiercely creative work. I love creating something from nothing. Yeah. And knowing also that what I create will in some way be of service. You know, so that kind of all tends to take care of itself. So rather than saying like, you know, this is where I see myself or this is what I want to create, it's more just knowing that I know myself well enough and I have sort of certain set of questions. And if I keep really, you know, if I keep aligning my actions with my essence, then the 16-year vision, you know, the 5-year vision, it's gonna work itself out however it needs to.
Yeah. That what you just spoke about sounds like a bit of a criteria for people that you get on the podcast. And, you know, you've had some amazing names that I mentioned earlier in your introduction. Do you have a strict sort of criteria in terms of people that you want on the show?
I have a couple of things. I'm looking for what I call embodied teachers, and that can be, you know, the person who delivers my mail. It can be, you know, a luminary, you know, in industry, in the arts. I don't really care what station in life you are. I don't care how massively accomplished or how many accolades you are, or how wealthy you've become, or how, you know, big a company you've built. You know, what I look at is when I look at you and the way that you're living your life, is there something where I'm looking at that and saying, okay, so this person has something figured out and I kind of want to know, what have you figured out and what were the experiences that led you to this place in your life? And I'm more interested in people who, while I do interview a lot of authors and writers and artists, I'm really interested in people where they're not just talking about it or writing about it or creating media around it, but there's something about the way they're actually living their lives where even if they never wrote a word, you could look at that and just know they'd figured something out. And that's the person I'm interested in speaking with.
That's very well put.
More questions? All right, Jonathan, we've hit the personality round of the interview. Johnny's got the first question.
Yeah, Jonathan, just give our listeners some advice who are having bad days. What would you tell them?
Classic gratitude exercises. We've heard these a million times. Spend a moment and just ask yourself, you know, like, what is one thing, two things, three things in the moment that I'm grateful for, that in some way I contributed to making happen.
Okay, Jonathan, we're going to take you back to your childhood. On your childhood bedroom wall growing up, what posters did you have on the wall?
Man, it depends how old.
Let's say 10.
I used to love music and magic, awesome. and I still do. I still love both. So. Yeah. You know, back in the day, like there, I had album covers, you know, Boston. I was a little into prog rock, stuff like that. So I had a bunch of music stuff. Probably there used to be a show on Broadway called Doug Henning's Magic Show. And I'm pretty sure I had his poster on my wall also.
That's awesome. I love the magic too. So Jonathan, if your three closest friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
Oh, man. Things that I can repeat publicly?
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, there's the answer to that question, which goes, well, these are the things I hope they'd be saying about me. And then right. there's the answer, which is like, this is what they'd probably really be saying about me. I don't know. If you ask them, you know, if they were sitting at a table and somehow I came up, I would hope they would say that, you know, I was helpful. I was creative, that I was a good person. That's kind of, you know, I think when it comes down to it, that's what I want. That's what I would want them to say. You know, he's a good man. He's a good father. He's a good husband. He's a good friend. I hope.
Definitely. I think they would.
Yeah, that's nice.
All right, Jonathan, final question. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites, only rules, no family or friends, but it can be anyone dead or alive. Who are you inviting?
Huh. All right. So we got the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Feynman.
Yes.
Who was a legendary physics teacher. Yep. Maybe Maya Angelou.
Okay.
Awesome.
Dr. Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? I'm blanking on the guy's name. Theodore Meisel, Dr. Seuss.
Nice.
Yeah, man.
The first time anyone's ever said that one.
What a great group of people at that table.
Yeah. All right, everyone at home, get following Jonathan. He's at www.jonathanfields.com. You can also find him at www.goodlifeproject.com. On Twitter and Instagram, he's at Jonathan Fields. And on LinkedIn, he's Jonathan Fields 1. Jonathan, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate all the knowledge and wisdom that you've shared with us and our audience.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me. I enjoyed the conversation.
Johnny, great episode with Jonathan Fields, man.
Yeah, it was definitely an important conversation for you and I to have. You know, we could get caught up in this pull forward,
yeah.
Think ahead, and being stripping things back and sitting with our thoughts is very important. And
yeah, sometimes we get very physical, don't we? And sometimes we forget that mental side of things that is really important in terms of creating good lifestyles for ourselves. And got a lot out of that episode in terms of things that I think I can apply.
Yeah, like when we talk, the one thing that it's been on my mind simultaneously for my own life is when we talked about sitting back and
reflecting,
man. Yeah. That's it. Reflection. And I struggle with that. I was at dinner last night talking to my friend about that. Like, it's hard for me to sit in that space about, and she was like, you should, you know, you guys have done a lot, or your career is here and you should be happy. And it's like, I don't know if happy is the right word. And I don't know what to gauge anything to.
Sometimes we don't embrace it properly, I think. Even for us, we've done 155 episodes or something. Some great shows, some great people that we've actually connected with. And sometimes we don't even take a moment to really just reflect on how far we've come.
I don't even know. And that's not just with the show, though. Because what I was doing just 3 years ago compared to what I'm doing now. And then, you know, we all have a story.
Yeah, even intent and just why we're doing it. I think we have grown both as human beings over the last couple of years. So.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know how to equate that to anything.
Yeah.
With the reflection part. So I kind of, all right, I kind of could wink my eye at it.
I think we struggle to put a value on it.
That's what it is. It's like, all right, I see it. Let me put the mouthpiece back in and let's just plant back down and just keep throwing caution to the wind sort of thing.
Yeah, I agree.
That sort of thing. But it's Jonathan, he's been, you know, he's older than us. And that's where, you know, our coach is listening now, and then you and myself, it's important to surround ourselves around these guys and women who are more experienced.
Yeah,
that we can learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that stage is like, why do something that you don't have to do? You can learn it from some of these great guys and girls.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's one of those things, is you don't have to be reading an encyclopedia, but this is our way of, I know that Tim Ferriss has said this, that his show is about him creating himself an MBA.
Yeah.
This is kind of the
that's
way
interesting.
It is.
You said MBA, like a master's in...
Like a master's, yeah. Yeah, like it's a master's program that he's created for himself by learning from the best and picking the brains of the best. And I think we're doing something very similar. And it's one of those things that, like, I know that you've got a psychology background.
Yeah.
I haven't done a lot of studies in
But you have a business background.
Yeah, but that's why it's great to have guys like Jonathan. Because yeah. that's kind of the area that he tackles, that psychological side, that mental side that you don't get to learn in the textbook.
Yeah.
So I was very appreciative of some of the things that he shared with us.
Yeah, and it's what you said about before you brought Ferris up, you were getting on. I was going to say, man, you really remind me of. I'm learning more through the show about you because we're not only sitting 155 episodes in with guests, but we're also sitting together in this space.
Oh, big time! Like I know more about you now than I did 2 years ago,
for sure. And I feel that like. Creating self-efficacy. Like, why would you, if you could figure out, or, and I'm speaking in general here, if you could find something, like maybe it's a book or a product or a podcast that could help assist you into not making as many mistakes, to not needing to fail as much, why wouldn't you do it?
Fucking
and that's exactly, and that's what you keep bringing up in random ways. And I think that's the message, right?
Yeah.
Self-efficacy. You don't have to fucking fail over and over.
Failing can hurt, man.
You learn from the people who have failed and listen to them. And if you're doing something passionate, don't make those same mistakes.
Big time. Don't make the same mistakes. And then once you don't make those same mistakes, pass it on to someone else so they don't make the same mistakes.
And what are you doing there? You're polishing this fucking amazing ball of energy, and it's almost like the secret. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we could share it with people.
And who knows? You might be able to reciprocate and teach them something that they don't know. And
vice versa.
It just creates a better world, right?
Yeah, it's changing the frequency.
Hell yeah.
I think Rogan does that really well in terms of like stripping everything that he says away or whatever he does, you know, his vices. But just the fact of like having conversations of bettering people, bettering the people around you by self-developing.
Yeah.
Because if we could self-develop each other, and then we could put that on other people, and then they could, you know what I'm saying? That's changing the frequency, and it's really important.
I think, biggest takeaway point is learn and put yourself out there to learn. And then once you learn something, teach it to someone else.
Yeah, take action. Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys, big show's coming up. I don't want to spoil who's coming on. You're going to have to wait and see.
It's wait and see the waiting game. Tom Petty had a song, The Waiting is the Hardest Part.
Yeah, for sure. But, guys, we've had some amazing guests. So if you haven't yet, go back and check out some of the old shows. I think you'll really enjoy connecting the dots. I think if you like Jonathan Fields, you might like someone like Melissa Ambrosini, probably.
Yeah, that's interesting. In the same we've sort done of a space. Lot of Lewis.
Yeah, Lewis House would be another one.
Aubrey.
Enjoy. Chase Jarvis.
Yeah, Chase.
They're really kind of into that same
I was watching
sort of space,
Chase last
man.
Night, actually. I was Chase watching is awesome, some, man. You know what he does? He does his production for his videos so well.
You
like
can tell,
his
that's
edits.
Why,
and, yeah, I was. Yeah, anyway, we could rant.
He's
but shout out to Chase Jarvis, creativelive.com.
Sure. So, guys, remember, please share it with your friends. Subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can find Johnny at.
Follow me, guys. Johnny Stofko, Facey, Insta, Twitter. New YouTube channel, just getting it started. Johnny Stofko, love for you to subscribe. How about you, big dog?
I'm at Tristan Cannell, Tristan Cannell Fitness. So find us, follow us. We'll add you back as friends. We always do.
We always do. I love that.
So, guys, get in touch, and we'd love to hear from you. Inbox us or, you know, tag us in posts. And anyone that you want to see features on the show, you know, we've done 151, so we're going to have
155.
A few returning awesome guys. We've got some new guys and girls coming on.
We got new blood coming.
We always like to hear what your thoughts. Like, for us, we've got a pretty strict guidelines on who we bring on, but we like following people for a little while and seeing what they can do and the kind of magic they can bring to our audience.
That's right, and that strict guidelines, that skeleton revolves solely around you guys listening. We have a duty now to live up to a standard that how can we bring the best product forward with the best people forward to provide applicable advice and to further better educate everyone listening. So we appreciate you.
For sure. Anyone that knows The Rock, please let get in touch.
You love him.
I love The Rock.
Yeah, man. My thing is, actually, I should sit down with
Baywatch. Have you seen the commercial for that?
How did it go from hot chicks to hot dudes? Like, what did that happen? What is
there
happening
a
here?
Of really smoking girls.
Yeah,
place.
But dude, the trailer.
Stop
I'm not
looking at Zac Efron.
Yeah. We'll just leave it at that. You know, I'm a Zac guy.
You're jacked.
Yeah, little guy though.
Yeah, he is.
Real little guy. Yeah, good but yeah,
I get Zac on.
Yeah, bring Zac. He was just in Sydney.
I saw that.
They were doing
that girl.
Yeah,
she's beautiful.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, guys, we'll check you soon. So remember, subscribe and leave us great messages. We'll catch you soon.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.